You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. While the peace movement has run into opposition from the city of New York, millions are scheduled to march past the United Nations and rally for peace in New York City on Saturday, February 15th, which has been planned as an international day of protest. So far, they have been unable to get a permit from the city to march. United for Peace and Justice has gone to court to sue the city for what they say are their constitutional rights. Peace Watch spoke with Jane Hirschman of United Peace for and Justice today at the federal courthouse in New York City while the hearing was still in session.
We are going to have a national mobilization. The world says no to war. This demonstration is being held in New York City, but it's also being held in many cities around the world. I think over 30 countries will be having mobilizations on that day. The police in New York City will not give us a parade permit. They want us to remain stationary and have a rally. And we do not accept their offer, so we're in court because we are demanding the right to march. Labor is coming, people of color, students, you know, people are organizing contingents to march in this rally. And we want to be active in the march and rally. We don't just want to be stationary. Which also, we think it's very important to march past the UN, since the UN is a very big player in what's happening in terms of the cry to go to war against Iraq. And we want to send a message to the people in the UN and around the world that we are standing up and we are saying no to Bush's war.
Jane Hirschman with United for Peace and Justice. As Secretary of State Colin Powell made his presentation to the UN Security Council this week to convince the world that Iraq was in breach of the UN Resolution 1441, he seemed not to have made a dent in the passion of people against an impending war. For them, Bush's case was not made.
Protesters at the Times Square rally in New York came from far and wide. They were of every hue, and a number of them were physically challenged. There were many telling the Bush administration that it was not speaking for them. Petra Siomarco came from Ringwood, New Jersey, and wore a bloodied headband with a gag with the word expression written across it. She welcomed the opportunity to make her voice heard.
I just came out tonight because I feel that everybody that's here tonight counts as one more voice towards no war in Iraq. I don't believe in war. I don't believe that it's ever the answer to anything. And I do believe that we are told that if we do come out and voice our opinions against the war, that we are un-American, that we're bad people for doing it, that, you know, we should stand behind the government and everything. Well, I, for one, think the government is wrong in this. I don't believe in it, and I'm here to say that today. If I were to stand by myself on the street corner today and wear this that I'm wearing right now, I'd be called names, I'd be outcast, I'd be ridiculed, everything, just for voicing my opinion on what I think.
Nirmala Mahat is visiting New York from Nepal and supports the efforts of peace-loving people everywhere and wished that in her own Nepal, a recently signed truce would bear fruit.
From the last 7 years, we are facing the conflict. And so now, just recently, after a few weeks back only, that that ceasefire was announced. And I think that hopefully this will work out this time. And maybe that peace will come in our country too.
June Adams from Doctors and Nurses for Peace, who addressed the rally, is a newcomer to the anti-war movement.
I went down to Washington on the 18th because I think to myself, well, I'm really against the war, but if I don't do anything about it, it doesn't count. Being against the war and don't stand up doesn't count.
While many complain that the Bush administration is not taking note of the numerous protests all around the world against the U.S. drumbeat for war, Reverend Daughtry of the House of the Lord Church in Brooklyn, New York, is convinced they're having an effect.
I think that the only reason why they haven't gone to war is because of the crowds like these out here, the crowds that we have seen mobilized in Washington. October 26th, there was hundreds of thousands. January 18th, hundreds of thousands. Across the country, hundreds of thousands. The work done by ANSA, the work done by United for Justice and Peace, the work done by Not in Our Name, Win the War, Win Without, these organizations which have worked so diligently to turn out masses of people. And not only so, even across the world. The people of the world do not want war. All the polls indicate the people of the world do not want war.
Brian Becker of International ANSA, organizers of the rally, made it clear to the people in attendance that the police were trying to undermine their efforts at protest, pointing out the police's claim that while there were permits for the demonstration at Times Square and the UN, there was no permit for the march between both places.
What that does effectively is playing the catch-22 game of the cops. Yes, you had the right to march, but you can't go as a group. It's like saying you have the right to drive a car, but you don't have the right to have gasoline. We have the right to demonstrate, and we're not going to stop. We're not going to leave. We're going to stay strong, and we're going to assert that we have this right to demonstrate and protest.
ANSA's Tony Murphy, who put the number of protesters in New York to be in the thousands, was not terribly concerned about what some called the police's repressive measures.
There's permits for our locations. You don't need a permit to exercise your right to march. They've tried to prevent us from marching, but we had a permit, and that was a couple thousand people. That was our permit, and that's allowing us to march. So I expect this to go like most of our demonstrations have gone, which is, well, they did arrest three people last week. They're definitely, you know, trying to prevent people from demonstrating against this war. There's the February 15th problem. You know, they're trying to prevent that demonstration from happening too because they know it's going to be so big.
The heavy police presence, nonetheless, did not deter the protesters. And it was sheer irony to see both the police and the protesters marching off to the UN, albeit with different intentions. An opportunity some protesters took to engage the police in dialogue.
But how could a country of freedom, and you guys purport to support freedom, how could you lock up 2 million people when no other country even has 200,000 people in jail? What kind of freedom is that that you're protecting? You're not protecting freedom. No.
As is to be expected, there was at least one counter-demonstrator. Big enough to offer encouragement to the U.S. war effort, he was not big enough, however, to say his name.
Newcomb! Newcomb! What happened to my audience?
May I have an interview with you?
I don't think you're going to hear anything that you want to hear, but I appreciate your asking, though. You're trying to get the other side, and I appreciate that, but you're not going to hear anything that, you know, that you want to hear. Look, these people are not worried about the hundreds of thousands of atrocities that the Saddam government is committing. Plain and simple. I don't know what the heck they're marching around these streets. There's one lady in it that's saying that we've committed atrocities, that we're imperialists. I guess she's going to have to show me what, you know, chapter of history she's talking about.
Thanks. You, sir, you're who?
Just a concerned citizen like you.
But if one bystander coming off work is any indication to go by, many Americans are still so bogged down with life, they still have no information with which to take a stand.
I believe in peace. Unless they have a solid proof, I really strongly urge for the president to, you know, wait, because war is very bad.
You're not in a march like this because?
Well, right now, I didn't really know they were going to have one, and I really would like to listen to what they said tonight, and then I'll make my final decision.
For her and others like her, International ANSA, other anti-war groups and progressive media will have to work doubly hard to involve her and snowball the movement to bring the war machinery to a grinding halt. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I am Ian Forrest.
In what organizers say is an attempt to spend more money on academic events instead of parties, Howard University Graduate Student Assembly hosted Destination Iraq, a debate forum between six panelists from local university and government policy think tanks. The panel took place in Washington and presented arguments for and against military invasion of Iraq. Deputy Director of the Institute for the Near East Policy, Dr. Patrick Clawson, began with a pro-invasion position focused on the problem of Saddam Hussein's dictatorship and the continued suffering of the Iraqi people.
Well, if you want to have to use threats in order to get the guy to cooperate, then the fact is that you're in a world in which either you use containment or you use overthrow. Containment means that you have a long term, you maintain that threat to the guy, that, listen, you do anything bad and we're going to whack you. And if that kind of approach is really hard to do. It's a lot harder to do, to be ready to whack somebody for 20 years than to whack them. And if you want to have that long-term containment approach, you need to have some assurance of long-term support from the international community to be able to carry that out. And, of course, what we find is quite the contrary, that there is not that degree of support from the international community. And so, therefore, containment looks extremely unattractive to the Bush administration. And they are very suspicious that Saddam's strategy is to delay any decision about this matter for a matter of some until the international community loses interest in the issue and goes away.
I think we should never, ever start a war.
Professor Thomas Boudreau from American University's School of International Service.
We should, the war, if necessary, should come to us. We should not go to war. In just war theory, war ought to be the last resort, the last possible resort, before you send young men and women off to the slaughter. Unfortunately, war has come to us. September 11th was a declaration of war, loud and clear, against us and our homeland. It is a war against Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, a war that is far from won, and that a war in Iraq, as my new colleague here has just mentioned, may well strengthen enemies who have already demonstrated the intent and capacity to hit us here at home and, in fact, in this city. War has not come from us, has not come to us from Iraq. Iraq has not attacked us yet. They are contained. That may not be a perfect solution. It certainly isn't one that can last into the indefinite future. But it gives us time to pursue the war against Al-Qaeda.
James Phillips from the Conservative Heritage Foundation restated the list of reasons repeatedly presented by the Bush administration as the threat of Saddam Hussein and his yet-to-be-verified weapons of mass destruction.
I'm not convinced by a lot of the arguments people make that, you know, merely keeping him ringed under the threat of military force is going to contain him. I mean, some of these same people were arguing that economic sanctions would contain him before the first Gulf War. And we've seen that economic sanctions not only couldn't contain him then, but they haven't done much since then. I would say UN inspections are not the answer. Inspectors failed to discover and uproot all of Iraq's prohibited weapons programs in the 7 years of inspections between 1991 and 1998. UNSCOM, which dispatched the inspectors to verify that Iraq had disarmed itself, was thwarted by systematic Iraqi denial, duplicity, and deception. And the lesson of UNSCOM, I would argue, is that Saddam Hussein cannot be trusted to disarm his own regime. The inspectors can't do it, because they can't inspect what they can't find, and they don't know what they can't find. But even Hans Blix, in his recent report, has argued that Iraq has not fully cooperated with the inspectors. And as long as Iraq is not cooperating, it's unrealistic to expect the inspectors to find his weapons that he's had plenty of time to hide in a country that's bigger than Texas. Inspections address the symptoms but not the cause of the chronic confrontations with Iraq. And the root of the problem is not, to me, the weapons of mass destruction, but the nature of Saddam's regime. And as long as he's in power, there can be no way of being sure that Iraq has been disarmed of its weapons of mass destruction. Ultimately, the only way to be certain of ridding Iraq of its weapons of mass destruction is to rid it of Saddam Hussein. And I would just echo what the two previous speakers said, that I think in the long run, not only the American people, but the Iraqi people will be better off once Saddam is gone.
But say none of those disaster scenarios happen. Israel isn't involved, we don't use nukes, Israel doesn't use nukes, the fighting is quick.
Joseph Cirincione from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace countered that blowback from the increased Al-Qaeda recruitment is the hidden disastrous result of a preemptive strike in the Middle East.
U.S. troops enter Baghdad, and it looks like Paris, not Beirut. People are cheering us. I think a good portion of the population will welcome the U.S. troops, will be thrilled that we're there, will see this as a liberation. And a lot won't. A lot won't. There are deep divisions of various kinds inside Iraq. As soon as the U.S. overthrows this brutal dictatorship, a dictatorship that I agree with some of the panelists, should be overthrown. I just disagree that it should be us who are doing the overthrowing. Once this brutal dictatorship is removed, I think all hell is going to break loose in Iraq, which is exactly why we will need to have several hundred thousand U.S. troops occupying Iraq. There will no doubt be patriotic democratically inspired Iraqis who would like to take over the country, like to be the new government. The question is that government going to have any force? Is there any unity inside Iraq that could give one confidence that there could be quickly a democratic regime established in Iraq? I think the evidence points exactly the opposite. Let me give you just one example. What happens when some of the Kurds in northern Iraq decide that this is their chance to press for greater autonomy? And some of those Kurds decide that autonomy should be an independent Kurdistan. The Kurds are the largest minority in the Middle East without a country of their own. That is going to cause serious problems for the United States and for Turkey, the United States' close ally, which has a substantial Kurdish minority. There are going to be, that's just one of a myriad ethnic, even tribal conflicts that the U.S. will be put in the middle of. I believe that the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq will trigger a new wave of recruits to al-Qaeda. Far from being a solution in the war against terrorism, the invasion will worsen our war against terrorism. Here's what the former CIA director of counterterrorism operations, Vincent Canestraro, told us. A war in Iraq would serve as a recruiting ground for al-Qaeda. In fact, some al-Qaeda people believe that a U.S. war, unilaterally particularly, but even if it were multilateral, would be desirable for al-Qaeda. These risks might be worth taking if the risks of doing nothing were greater. But I don't believe they are. I disagree with my colleague from the Heritage Foundation. We have this man in a box. He ain't going nowhere. With tens of thousands of troops outside the country and hundreds of inspectors in the country, we have effectively stopped any Iraqi aggression. The threat is contained. He can't invade anybody. He can't attack anybody. He cannot conduct any large-scale production of chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons. I disagree. Continuing with the inspections is not only the best alternative, I think it is the only rational alternative.
Again, Thomas Boudreaux.
Christmas Eve, I don't know if you saw the photo, but Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld holds up two hands and goes, we can fight two wars at a time. So what he's really talking about is we can fight three wars at a time. The war in Afghanistan, the war against al-Qaeda, the war to find and deal with Osama bin Laden, plus Iraq, plus North Korea. This, I submit, is insanity. A leader's first responsibility is to preserve the peace and not to take the country to the brink of three wars. So let me ask, how is our war with al-Qaeda going? Is the war over? Have we won it? Are we ready for the next stage?
Harold Scott, Deputy Director of the Ralph Bunche Center for International Affairs at Howard University, argued from the point of international law and consequences of unilaterally setting 21st century precedents for starting war.
I would contend that the liberal misgivings about this war does not have much to do with our ignorance of Iraqi suffering. It is not that we don't care about democracy in Iraq. It's simply that the historical record of using military force to build democracy is so very bleak. With the possible exceptions of Germany and Japan during World War II, I know of no other case where a foreign power used military force and the result was a democracy in that nation. That's objection number one. Objection number two has to be understood against the broader backdrop of Western international history over the last 500 years. By articulating or making an argument for a preemptive strike on the basis of what Saddam Hussein may do with nuclear weapons is a complete rejection of the principle of the jurisdictional equality of all international states. The United States has arrogated upon itself to decide the most fundamental questions about national security to individual nations. I am not going to argue or even say that I am unconcerned with the possibility of Saddam Hussein having nuclear weapons. But what frightens me even more is the United States setting up a precedent, a legal precedent, for any state to invade, to launch a preemptive strike when it sees a threat in its national interest and launch that strike preemptively. The implications for that, the implications for the conduct of international relations across the 21st century, I don't think have been adequately been addressed by this administration.
Thanks to David Russo of the D.C. Independent Media Center for filing that report.
The greatest Americans have not been born yet. They're waiting patiently for the past to die. Please give blood. Those crumbled tablets were to share a story with a burning bush. Where is that voice from nowhere to remind us that the holy ground we walk on, purified by native blood, has rooted trees whose fallen leaves now color code a sacred list of demands? Who among us can give translation of autumn hues to morning news? The anchorman thrown overboard has simply rooted us in history's repeating cycle, a nation in its saddened ears that won't acknowledge karma. Where is that voice from nowhere, the ones your prophets spoke of? There are voices from fear, disconnected from their diaphragms, dangling from coffee-covered teeth that spill into our laps and scorch our privates. There are voices from the sides of necks, some already noosed, dangling participles, pronouns running for sentence, serving life in corner offices and ghetto corners. Their voices are the same, dead to themselves, numb to the possibility of truth existing beyond that which they can palm in their hands, period. There are voices of elders, which seem to do no more than damn us to our childish ways, for in many households wisdom no longer comes with age. So where is that voice from nowhere, that burning bush, that passing dove? I hear the voices of generals calling for ammunition, presidents calling for arms, women calling for help. Where is that voice from nowhere, that God of Abraham? Can he be heard over the gunfire, the whiz of passing missiles, the crash of buildings, the cries of children, the crack of bones, the shriek of sirens? Or is that his mighty voice, your angry God craving the sacrifice of virgin generation sons degenerate, your holy books written in red ink on burning sands? Your prayers between rounds do no more than fasten the fate of your children to the hammered truth of your trigger, a truth that mushrooms its darkened cloud over the rest of us, so that we too bear witness to the short-lived fate of a civilization that worships a male god. Your weapons are phallic, all of them. That dummy that sits on your lap is no longer worth.
Saul Williams, Bloodletting. Question: what's more charismatic than Donald Rumsfeld's chiseled jaw? It may be the vocal group of Californians shaking canes, rolling in wheelchairs, and supported by walkers marching for peace each Friday, disregarding the obstacles of poor health and cold weather. A 100-strong group of residents at Mill Valley's Redwood Retirement Center in Marin, California, march out of their nursing home and take to their neighborhood streets to oppose the impending war in Iraq. Pacifica's Peace Watch had a chance to speak with one of those enthusiastic activists this week, and Eleanor Kennedy expressed both her concerns and her hopes for a more peaceful America.
We're very happy to do it. We've been wanting to do something for a long time. We started out thinking we were only going to have about a half a dozen people there, and it turned out to be nearly 100. Well, I'm just an 85-year-old woman in a retirement home.
An 85-year-old peace activist, I would assume we should say at this point.
I certainly am. Yes.
I saw pictures of the protest. It was quite impressive. Many of your residents there in the home turned out in wheelchairs. And
Yes. And those who want to, who are in wheelchairs and all, we will always take them on Friday to be on the peace march.
And so how many of them actually attended the peace march last Friday?
Well, let's see. It was 100 altogether, nearly 100 of everyone from all the different levels. They were coming up in more numbers than we expected.
Were you surprised that they would want to participate as well?
I was surprised there were that many. It's difficult for them to express themselves, many of them. It's not always easy to know how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
But they did feel very deeply for this.
You're certain of that? They understood what was going on?
Oh, absolutely. We would not have taken anyone out there you know, didn't know what it was all about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so how? What prompted this?
A few of us have been wondering about having what we could do to help with the piece. Because of our age and all, during the time we were trying to get it together, two of us kept landing in the hospital. Both of us have heart problems. And so in between that time, we would try to get together, but it was difficult because mm-hmm. we weren't feeling that well. So when we met this last time, we were surprised that a great many people came. We didn't want it to be just meetings anymore. So we just quickly said, let's do it now. And we did. Within 2 days from the time we had the meeting, we went out. So it was really, many people didn't even know what was going on until it was going on. Well, about a quarter to four, people started gathering in what we call the residence area where the
Reception area.
Reception, mm-hmm, thank
yes.
you. You may have to help me with words now.
And I'd be happy to do so if you promise to help me as well.
Okay. So, yes, and we still didn't know that there were going to be that many. We had signs made by, we have quite a few retired artists live here. This mm-hmm. is a very informal place. We had people who could make signs. We had people who were eager to do it. And so we had signs that we put around our neck because we can't hold up signs very long.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have them around our neck.
And what did they say?
All of them was peace, no war, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all bundled up very warm, wore our caps and jackets and all. And we walked out and went out, and pretty soon, more and more people were joining us from the Redwoods as they were hearing about it.
Mm.
Some of them were hearing about it right then and there. We were backed by the people who run the Redwoods. They were very pleased we were doing this, and they eventually brought out a card table that had hot coffee and cream and sugar and all for people who would like to have coffee. Also, some of the workers brought out chairs for some of us who couldn't stand for a whole hour.
Mm.
So some of us were able to sit down every now and then. We had a few people who, when they saw us, came over and joined.
But
really
now,
we wanted to be people, you know, from nursing homes, hopefully all over the country. Both Republicans and Democrats, I don't think that that's just always a Democrat. You know, I'm a Democrat, but I know others who are Republicans were there, yes. They mm-hmm. do not want war. We believe in peace. We may be naive, but I don't think so. We definitely believe that we can come to an agreement with the rest of the world. And it amazes me that I even heard today that, you know, first we'll have war and then we will take care of the people afterwards. Why can't we do it the other way around? Why can't we take care of the people before the war if that is what is needed for us to live at peace? And I think it is. I kind of feel that if we continue to do it all the time, even if war does start, and if we never, never, never give up and continue to do it, I think we will build up in the country, because other people are joining, as they did when we were there. People all over the country will begin to join, and I think the force of it, it should do something. If that doesn't do it, then how can we call ourselves a democracy?
So when you all were out there walking with your signs hung around your neck and in your wheelchairs and walkers, did you get any response from people that were driving by?
Enormous response. People were honking their horns and waving the peace sign and smiling at us. Yes, we got an enormous amount of a response. There were a few people who gave us the finger, but they were rare. You know, we're a peaceful group.
Yes.
We're there just to say we're for peace. That's all we intend to do.
Eleanor Kennedy of the Mill Valley's Redwood Retirement Center in Marin, California. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Keith Shaljian, Dred Scott Keys, and Reem Kahuta. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.